Welcome to the TechNoid Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why more than 100,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their email marketing by going to activecampaign.com/TechNoid. Get your first 2 months for free on me. I am a huge fan of ActiveCampaign. They're a sponsor of the show, but they're also the CRM for all of my businesses. So this is not a bullshit live read. It's something you should actually check out. Dan Ali is the founder of AnyCurb, and he is here on the show. Dan, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Thank you for letting me just say Dan instead of having to learn how to pronounce the Y. It's very helpful and considerate on a Friday.
Even though you learned all three, so now you can.
I did learn all three, yeah. But Dan is definitely easier to go with. So we are going to get into what AnyCurb is. I just want to set this up for the audience. I can't remember if it was on Twitter I saw it, and it was the Chicago Inno. Where was I reached out to you guys directly immediately from the post.
Yeah, so Chicago Inno. Yeah.
Okay, so I looked at your company, and I think anyone who listens to this show regularly knows that my first like 5 years in entrepreneurship was in commercial real estate. I guess it wasn't in entrepreneurship, it was just like work. I graduated college and that was my job. And it spun off into entrepreneurship because I looked at commercial properties, residential properties, all the same. I looked at startups the same way, undercapitalized properties that too many people had their paws on and too many people were beating the margin down to where it was not a good business. And it can be a fantastic business, and commercial real estate is still a fantastic business even when the market is weird. Even in 08, like I made the most of my money in that business in 08 when the market crashed because I was in the nuisance properties and I felt like chaos breeds opportunity. It breeds change. And I am now, you know, advising on a couple of companies that are sort of like open door, one company called Second Avenue. And I've worked with almost a dozen real estate focused tech companies now. So when I saw you guys on there and I looked you up, I immediately wanted to talk to you because we are entering this phase. And I personally just sold a condo and bought a house like in the last 2 months. And what we went through is unnecessary. And like, whether you're talking about getting homeowners insurance or the fees for the realtors, which were exceptionally nice and great, I'm not 100% sure that it was like 20 grand great.
Yeah.
And so when I looked at what you're doing, it's like between COVID, technology, and just younger people having zero patience for doing things like the 1980s, the timing for AnyCurb could not be better. And then I saw that you're bootstrapped and my brain exploded in joy. So I'd love to just like from the top, like what is AnyCurb? Because I think people are going to love this.
Yeah. So AnyCurb is based on research. I come from a data background, but it's based on research that 42% of homeowners would actually sell if they were made a market offer. When we look at the market as a whole, only 1% of homes on average are on sale at any time and 3 to 5% churn every year. If you look at a COVID environment, people are even more against putting their home on the market.
Yep.
Because they're afraid of because of the competitive nature, not getting enough people or getting people to go into their house, et cetera. But AnyCurb, we explore the off market as a viable option for our home buyers. What that means is, you know, when home buyers can't find a property, which in many cases they can't, we actually have an algorithm that understands which homes would sell if they were made a market price offer. We approach those homeowners with a offer that's fair and typically market price, and they save 3% roughly on the commission value, which on, you know, in an average transaction, they say it's 5 to 6% because we're eliminating one side of the fees, and there's no stress of searching and looking for a buyer. They have one right in front of them. So we're able to connect those two sites together. Recently, we just launched a self-service part of our platform, which leverages open listings. We can walk into that process next, but it's really our mission is to make selling easier and more efficient. You mentioned Opendoor as an example. They've had a lot of press recently. They're getting rates, you know, the average service fee for them is 6%, and then it's not service fee. Their fee for transact is 6%, and then their average fees are, you know, 2, 2.5%. Zillow offers us something similar. But slowly, those fees are going to go lower and lower and lower as they reach economies of scale, which will make the average real estate transaction that's at 5 to 6%, why would you not just sell it for cash?
Yeah.
So the brokerage has to stay competitive with that model. And it means us getting leaner and leaner. And as we get leaner, it's kind of making people transact more. You mentioned the 08 crisis. People live in their homes 3 years longer on average after 08. And it happens because they're financially crunched. But ultimately, when you sell your home, you're essentially losing 6% equity in the home, plus 1 to 2% in closing costs, which is absurd. right? You lost years and years of
appreciation. Investment is what you're saying.
It's, yeah.
I mean, it is, I guess, in some regards, but rarely.
It's tough. And people want to move more often now, you know, like people are, especially now, people, given the COVID environment, are moving from the city to the suburbs. And, you know, when they do that kind of transitional change, they want to maintain as much equity as possible. Especially millennials have made even a, more of an effort. I'm sorry if I'm running on, but they've made more of an effort to be
sure, man.
So like, you know, in for the silent generation and boomers, only 19% of those people attempted to sell their home before by themselves, before they, you know, enlisted an agent. Millennials, 57% of them attempt to sell their home before they enlist an agent. A lot of them fail, but that's a real number. And it's how do you kind of connect all those dots together and move the brokerage to this future model where we can compete with iBuyers, right? And so I think that's the that's really where we are.
So I want to pile on to this a little bit because there's we've got the why to do this down pretty pat, and I think it's pretty clear what you do. First off, I want to commend you for the sign behind you, for sale, phone number, any curve. Shameless self-promotion is my favorite part. Three things you said there that I think are really important here. And I'm going to start with the millennial component of this and sort of go down a rabbit hole. Off the top, the millennial investor via Robinhood and all of these people who now are self-directed investing, one of the biggest complaints that they have with a house sunk in cost, it's not just, there's been this reported that like they don't have the money. It's complete bullshit. There are some people who are tied up with student loans. I have the worst credit on the planet and student loans had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Like they literally were like, yeah, don't give a shit. Like you have cash, down payment, you meet the, okay, we're good. So their problem is that they don't want to be illiquid. They don't want to have no control of the money in the future. And to your point about wanting to move around, these guys want to move around all the time, just like they want to move jobs. They want to move, they don't want to get married and settled in so early. Like our generation wants to have flexibility. Maybe it's because we saw our parents for 50 years living in the same place and just don't want to do that. I don't know, but we don't want that. So the market has to change if it wants us to buy. That's the first thing. The other two parts of this that I think are extremely important, in particular to the people who are going to look at AnyCurve as customers or users. So first, you mentioned Opendoor. I mentioned Opendoor. And they just had their acquisition with the intention of IPO. There's Invitation Homes, Second Avenue. There's all these different groups. And there's Redfin and Zillow and others that do similar things. Rich people buy homes, single family homes, to rent them out. And they have for a very long time. And they buy them by the thousand. Their entire business model is predicated on identifying which homes have intrinsic value, whether that's rental value or just the house is right about the market, which ones are lived in or owned by people who have a little bit of financial trouble. And they reach out to them and they buy their houses before they mark them on sale. And they do that just like institutional investors buy stocks before they hit Robinhood. They get that little percentage of premium and that is what makes their yield. So every person who goes out there and buys it on the listing, I'm not going to call them a moron, but I just called them a moron, myself included. You are paying a premium so that a rich asshole can make more money. And to make it even further, if you go into neighborhoods, like I live in a fairly, affluent, whatever you want to call it, suburb, and I'm in Glen Ellen, there's like Highland Park, North, anything in the North Shore. Almost every house, including my own, is a pocket listing. It's a pocket listing because every single person who lives in this town is rich and smart enough to know that they're not going to buy a house on the market. They're not going to go through that because they don't do that at work. So why would they do that in their personal life? So you are providing to every single person out there the ability to act like the people who do this institutionally. And that to me is the part of this that I was like, got it.
Yeah, so exactly. So the point here is like, you know, the listing process is a lot of work. I mean, it's not that it doesn't take work, but it's for people that want to transact very quickly, right? The problem becomes when like, and we'll get into this process of getting into the pre-market, but essentially the listing process, the reason there's a premium is because someone wants to sell instantaneously. The competition for that is very strong because here come the iBuyers. On a residential side, you're competing against people that are going to pay 6% to buy your home in cash.
Yeah.
This is not going to work. So when you look at that part of the process, that needs to change. When you look at, you know, this getting a pre-market view into specific things, you're totally right. We look at like Snowflake, for example, just IPO, right? You have like an environment where you got people that bought it at $100. I think Warren Buffett made an insane amount of money off.
He's doing all right today.
Right. And so like at the end of it, the actual person has to buy it at $200+. I don't even know where it is right now, but something that's everybody, you know, you go to TikTok, everyone says that it's overvalued, don't buy it, et cetera. I'm not saying it is or not it is, but that's what the general thing is. And when it gets to the public level, it's hard to do. So yeah, like ultimately when you look at it, we're giving everyone an even playing field on the seller side, one, to be able to, you know, market your property instantaneously. You know, the amount of people that we talk to, most people either are or know somebody that says, I would sell my home for X price. Right? Everyone has a price. Some people love their home. You know, I would say it's a small fraction of people, but some people have a price. A lot of those people have a very fair price, right? So now they're going to go down this path to essentially pay all these fees to get someone to come in at that price. And is that really fair for that person? That's now stuck in this circle because now they're going to go out again, put 3% less equity in another house, and it's going to continue on and on. So I think there's the real competition at the broker's level, I think is really going to go onto the lower commission amounts. You see companies like Homey doing it. They're operating a flat fee model, you know, completely flat fee. When you look at the financial P&L, you know, it's really hard to do in bigger markets, but like, you know, it churns on. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
I think you nailed it. And like, I just think it's, so I'm going to use shameless self-promotion behind you. I'm going to shameless self-promote on my side. One of the reason that we do all of these investment shows and reviews and talk about equity crowdfunding and almost all the companies that come on the show are raising money equity crowdfunding. I talk about this because whether you like it or not, whether you view it, I know you do, but most people don't view it or do view it this way. Your home is a home. It is also your number one largest investment you're making. And it's time you start treating it that way. One of the challenges, you brought up Snowflake. I think it's fantastic as an example. So I am obviously have invested in 13 or 14 companies now via equity crowdfunding. Four of those companies have exited. I like it because I'm getting companies that could be exited or could IPO in some case at $2, $3 a share, which is absurd. And I know that there's a super high failure rate, but I know that if it gets to IPO, it's too late. Yep. Like the chances of you becoming Apple after Apple, like the IPO, it's like, whatever, $13 or something, and then to go up to where they are. Like, that is so unlikely. You're not, like, there's no room for retail investors to make money on IPOs for the most part anymore, unless you play a really, really long game. And so I even go to sites like Republic, but also like MicroVentures, and I look at Series D and Reg D offers where like Topgolf, Airbnb, Snowflake, Robinhood were all available pre-IPO, knowing that like, well, while it is probably richer than I would ever do if I was an accredited investor going in a major round, I don't have $2 million to park on a call. So I want to participate, but I also want to get in before it goes public for real. Because even if I bought in $180 a share, which is probably $30 a share more than Airbnb's worth, if it goes out at 200, there's zero chance that I make money on that. Zero. I'm going to lose money. And the house is the exact same thing. And I think like the more people who listen to this show, and I hope watch, I want them to learn about investing, not because they might get rich, but because they might learn for their entire life when they buy things. Rich people are rich because they buy assets. Poor people are poor because they buy liabilities. And you, I think, are putting people in a really, really unique position.
Yeah, and like, you're totally right. I mean, like your home is single-handedly something you're willing to put like, park your life. You're parking your life.
Yeah.
And like, if you think about it on a fundamental standpoint, my first LinkedIn post was like, today a person can trade their shoes on StockX easier and faster than they can do anything with their house.
Yeah.
You start thinking about transacting on your house, you're thinking about getting like 10 people involved. It's completely, and like, we don't really right now aren't involved in a lot of those kind of processes that are advancing. Like there's blockchain type of, a funding for
there's a million things that are coming. A
million things that are covered, right? But like the home buying and home selling process has been pretty untouched. And so like when you look at, you know, people have constantly said that finding the right house is the largest struggle in actually buying a house, not necessarily the mortgage process.
Yeah. Oh, we looked for, I mean, like we were not going to buy for a year, but we spent a year and a half looking at houses, walking in, and my wife and I would get into a fight in the first 9 steps of the house and then be the end of it. We got lucky. We walked in this and we're like, oh, we really like this house. And it was like in our price point. But we went through it the stupid way for a whole lot of reasons. But regardless, I just look at this and I think, like, this is an opportunity for people to start buying homes the way that rich people buy houses. And it, like, as an investment, not just as like, well, this was my best alternative. And so I want to know, like, for you personally, like, who are you? What is the background that gets you to this point? I understand that you're a data guy, so that helps a lot in understanding this. But real estate is one of those markets. It's not hard to disrupt from a technical standpoint. It's impossible to disrupt from an execution standpoint because there's so many people who have their finger in the jar.
Yeah, it took months to get to this point. So I started off, I've been at retail at Toys R Us. I was there for 5 years. I was at United Airlines for 2 years working on pricing for China. Then I went to Groupon, and I went for all the way from, like, you know, working in local analytics to running strategy analytics for Groupon Plus, which was their voucherless product before I left. Groupon's massive marketplace, like, it was 4 years of my life, but, like, learned so much about building a marketplace. Then went to Gympass in New York, which is, you know, a fitness company. I'm sure you've heard of them.
Right? Met him on the show, actually.
Right. So, yeah. So, like, essentially, like, it's been a lot of experiences in marketplaces, a lot of experiences in retail, making people happy. But I really, when I went to, I got triggered and I went to Inman, and I got triggered by the fact that my dad wanted to sell our home for about 4 years. And so at some point he was like, you know, I would accept, at that point it was $540,000 for our home. He's like, that's what I would accept. And he had this, like, in his head for like 4 years. And all he got from brokers was like, hey, I want to list your house. I want to list your house. I want to list your house. And, like, there wasn't ever, like, a real person that came to them. And because of my experiences in data, my first entire, like, 4 months of this year, 3 months of this year, I spent building and refining this algorithm that can identify people like my dad. Yeah. And it takes, like, 200 factors into account that include everything from, you know, age of stay, which is the most simplest thing, but it kind of meshes with everything from the most complex being what we call a neighborhood effect. So everyone, you know, a new neighborhood is built and a lot of people move in at the same time. A lot of people are around the same age group. They're going through the same life occurrences, et cetera. At some point, they all kind of want to sell at the same time too, because they're all ready to move. Their kids are getting around that same age and they want to move into a bigger house. But now one person puts their home on sale. What does that do to the three houses next to it? It pushes their sale because they're like, I can't sell with this person right next to me. I want to see how it goes. But that doesn't stop us, right? Because I can still go to that neighbor who might have a house that is perfect for this person. And people are, you know, buyers have a relative idea after at least seeing a few properties of what they like. And, like, things like the entryway, for example, they don't want to see a staircase at their entryway. Like, it's like that specific, and nothing like that exists when only one house in their desired neighborhood is on sale. The benefit that we also have with data is that 2004, 2005 was the rise of Zillow and a lot of these online marketplaces that started tracking images for historical kind of events. Today, I can reference almost, at this point, it's been 15 years, so everything is churned.
Yeah.
So I can almost reference a single image or a set of images for every property that's existed or sold at some point to get the bones. So, like, there just was no better opportunity than me to understand, how can I make my dad's life easier? How can I have him put up a sign that says, I'm willing to sell my house for 540 without, like, going through this entire stressful process, losing all his equity and taking the head off, like, the hair off his head.
Yeah.
I went to Inman. I looked at everything that was happening at Inman. Everyone's focusing on a lot of really cool stuff. Title process, mortgage process. But, like, the whole home sales, finding a right home, this concept wasn't spoke about, right? The market itself is moving to the iBuyer model. Obviously, like, real estate is a very person-to-person transaction. It's a big transaction. A lot of it is, like, talking to people, making sure they're fine. And so, like, you know, when you look at an iBuyer, they're able to circumvent it by saying, we're charging a service fee to just pay you that so you don't have to deal with a person. And, like, you know, sometimes when you're in an Uber, you kind of want to close your eyes and not talk to that person at all. And
pretend all the time.
Right? And they're, like, talking and talking. And, like, real estate is, like, you need someone holding your hand. And you need someone telling you, hey, you can get more equity. If you buy a $300,000 house and you can afford a $300,000 house, which most people do, and you lose an additional 3% on it, you're moving into an actual cheaper house because you're probably not making any money because you're probably break even on your assets.
Yep.
So then you're moving into a you're actually going downwards.
Yeah.
You're actually going down. And it's horrible. And, like, the amount of people that are able to break the barrier and go up are very small in number. And so, like, it's really for us to, you know, prevent that from happening, preserve equity while maintaining the brokerage model, because we do believe that the brokerage model is paramount to real estate.
Yeah.
We don't want it to disappear. It's a very person. You said it's the biggest asset in your life. Right.
I just always feel like the well, I understand why, because I know who is making money how. So let's set that aside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like agents, and this reminds me, I don't know if you've heard of Will and Trust. It's a movie startup. So I invested in them again through equity crowdfunding, and they gave me my money back after they got a big round. So I did all right, but like not as good as I would have.
Yeah.
They took the creating a will and a trust, thus the name, process, which sucks. And they said, yeah, you could do this on LegalZoom, but it's not very good. And you don't really know what is what. And you kind of are making a lot of assumptions. And you could also go with a lawyer. And the lawyer is going to ask you questions that they're required by law to ask you with an insensitive approach. And you will feel awkward and not know what you're doing. So we're going to build software that basically just holds your hand and walks you through this process. Now, real estate, I actually think could use a will and trust type software play on the entire mortgage process and like all the paperwork before it and the inspections and all that stuff. But where it doesn't have the ability to do that is me coming into a house, me having never owned one, and looking at the cracks in the ceiling and be like, does this preclude this from being real? And they're like, no, I've been in a million houses. I'm not an inspector. The inspector will tell you, but I can tell you from being in 1,000 houses, this isn't a problem. Like, it's having someone hold your hand and just make you feel comfortable that you're not an idiot. And so I think that there should be agents, brokers who help facilitate, but 3-6% of the house to do what I can do in a Google search. Like, I knew what house I was going to buy when I walked in. You had nothing to do with it. I appreciate you, but you know, within I just think the allocation of resources have been massively incorrectly applied.
Yes. So let me go through like a couple of examples that you mentioned that are important. So like for sale by owner, for example, right? They're about 8-12% of the market in any given year.
Yep.
But 90% of the for sale by owner listings, according to a lot of publications, fail. And yep. They fail because they kind of have three different options. They have a $0 option, which is list your home. They have a $399 option that says like, we'll let you put like, we'll take 20 professional photos, et cetera. Yep. And then they have like a full stack brokerage option, which is like the 5-6%. That they offsource to, you know, another mortgage brokerage company. But like the point is that the zero and 399, there's really what action is happening, right? Like you're still on your own. And yeah. So like there's no like kind of mid solutions. So you're either like, you know, I'm going to do it all myself, which like the $0 option has, you get access to the contracts. Good luck filling them yourself, which yeah. is also a very stressful process, by the way, even though the forms are pretty easy, it's still a pretty stressful process.
Yeah, no, it's if you're busy, it's a pain in the ass. And like, to your point, you're not a house salesperson. It's like, unless you are doing this for sale by owner and you know who you're going to call and be like, what are you going to hang out with create a lead list and start calling people in the top? Like,
yeah, exactly. So you still need someone marketing. And the point is like, do you really need both those sides? So like there's three types of listing agreements. So one of them that we deploy on the homeowner side is, you're probably familiar, it's an open listing agreement. Very unused, very underused, but essentially very used in commercial.
Yeah.
So my partner, Jim, who's our COO, he came from a commercial background. So he said, like in commercial, which you're aware of, a bill owner will say, my property is under demand. I don't need to pay both sides. Whoever brings me a buyer gets X percentage.
Yeah.
Very rarely used in real estate because people prefer that the exclusive option, which is you get paid no matter what, right? Your uncle Jimmy buys your house. It's under an exclusive listing agreement. You still owe the percentage. So like ours, we deploy open listing agreements. So our homeowners can go on our platform. They can literally within a minute claim their home, get on an open listing agreement. And now it's our job and responsibility to bring them a buyer, which is like the burden. If we don't bring them a buyer, we don't get paid. If we bring them a buyer, we get paid. Now you've created a fair sense of transaction value. Right, where it's like you're giving up, you're only paying if you bring a buyer. And so that's really like where we're pushing for is like making it transparent, right? Like if you go back and you sell a home at, let's say 6 points, for example, will you sit down with your broker at the end of the conversation and say, can you explain each of those points and where they went?
So I actually kind of did.
Okay.
But you can't. And like to me, and this kind of makes the point even more, I guess. But like for me, when we were buying a house, I actually was trying to acquire a house that was not for sale. Like that was my initial process. As I said, people who know how this works do it this way. I didn't need a broker for that. I was trying to reach out to him. It got more complicated. It turned out that the broker that we knew, who was a very nice lady, was actually friends with this guy who's like 87, was friends with his wife who passed away. So I thought, okay, it might actually be worth it to pay the percentage because it's a steal of a deal if I can get it. And she worked her ass off to get us in. And it didn't work out because that guy had a crazy daughter. And that's a whole other story for another show. Maybe we'll take that to Instagram. But what did happen is she found this house as a pocket listing. So in my mind, I was fine cutting her a large check because she had done months of work and was really hands-on to help me navigate this thing. But for the most part, most people are looking on Redfin for months until they find something they like. And then the realtor really is just like, is this the one? And then, yeah. And then here's your check. It's not, it's very, I don't know, it's almost like you feel powerless.
Yeah. And like, and there's a difference between pocket and open, right? So like pocket is exclusive. It's an exclusive agreement that says I represent the property, which is why pocket listings are going away, right? On an overall standpoint,
they're not supposed to be here and they're not supposed to be doing it, but they still are.
They say that 30% of the transactions in California happen are pocket. I mean, let's just be transparent. Yeah. It's going to be difficult. It's still going to occur in some realm, but like, you know, on an ultimate standpoint, like, We're not going after this. Our goal isn't to rip off the homeowner at all.
No.
Our goal is just to empower them and actually increase we talk about our flywheel. Our flywheel is if you get more sellers on the platform, you get more buyers on the platform. If you get more buyers on the platform, you get more buyers and sellers, you get more transactions. You get more transactions, you actually are lowering that selling fee because you're creating more transactions. There's more competition, more agents. The less transactions generate more sellers, and that flywheel continues. We want to get to a point where people should be able to move when they want to move, not when they have to move,
yep.
Right? And like pre-2008, you're talking about people living in their home for 6-7 years. Now it's 10 to 14. Like people still want to move. People didn't just change in 2008 because like a strike of lightning happened on everyone. And all of a sudden they're like, I want to move in 14.
Now they want to move immediately with COVID. Right? Like I want out.
Yeah, everyone wants out. So like the point is we're trying to make it as equitable as possible so they can maintain as much equity while maintaining in the bounds of what is right, which is, We approach homeowners when they're least suspecting. We have a partner in Kentucky, okay? He approached a home this buyer was looking for a home. He approached a home that was off market. And when he approached a home that was off market, he knocked on four doors, smart knocking, picking which doors to knock. And then one of them that night said, hey, I want to transact. Within 3 days, that house was under contract. So like this stuff moves really quick. And the job that we have, the benefit that we have and why we are here today and doing this today and why I thought myself, like, I can't wait 3 years to do this. And it's like the perfect time. I think in one of your other podcasts, you have like, are you before the time? Are you after time? Or are you right in time? Right? Right on time. And like, for me, it's like, I can't go and continue my career path for 2 or 3 more years because I'm missing out on this prime opportunity where data is readily available. Off-market data is cheap. We can actually begin quickly identifying who's willing to sell and not. And then you have tons of these services that essentially make your loan offer, cash offers, et cetera, that are operating in the marketplace because they have access to 0% capital, right? So like all of this is flowing right now, and we really want to target this market that's pretty untapped outside of on a local basis. Your local agent probably knows of 10 properties that are there. At a scale, this is what you said earlier, at scale, the normal person that doesn't know that agent doesn't know. So like how do you enable them with the same empowerment as someone that just knows the right person, which I never thought is really fair to just know the right person to get access to more. Everyone should know the right.
I think that sums this up perfectly in that, you know, we talked a little bit about pocket listings and sort of the knowing people. I actually think that what you create, so like right now, I could see you having to be somewhat defensive and be like, hey, we're pro owner. What people are missing though, is that if you scale and not much, you don't even have to scale much to get to this point. You make pocket listings not need to exist. There is no need for these things to exist because a person can literally just post their home and be like, I am available always. I am always for sale for the right price. My price is this. If you want to pay for that price, God bless you.
So that exists. That exists on our platform. So this is self-promotion. All right. So essentially you as my father, for example, wants to sell his house for 540. He goes online. He can literally claim his house on our platform. Say, I'm available for 540. By the way, we use Airbnb type masking technology to mask their address, mainly because Zillow had a service called Make Me Move, right? But Make Me Move, ultimately Zillow sells zip codes to agents, right? I mean, like that's because they're selling the leads over. They're when you look at that make me move price, what ended up happening, and Zillow took it down, is like you're getting a lot of traffic from agents kind of nagging these homeowners to list their property. And homeowners are like, no. That's not what I intended at all. I didn't intend to just get badgered by agents. I want to meet real buyers. And so it wasn't achieving that mission. So if a homeowner goes on our platform, their address is completely masked. It says, this is the general neighborhood. This is what their home looks like. This is how much they're willing to accept. On our side, we verify the buyers. So we don't want, like, you know, for sale by owner, you know that a lot of people that see houses today are looky-loos. They don't actually have any intention to buy.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you're taking someone to an off-market property, they want someone that's not a looky-loo. They're not going to waste their time. They're on a busy schedule. So we verify that buyer to make sure that they're actually qualified to actually purchase their home, either through them providing a proof of pre-qualification or pre-approval before we interact with any off-market property. So we've actually created that, what you just mentioned, on the platform. And now we're just, you know, in efforts to scale it. And this is honestly, like, our intention is knowing that the brokerage business is super paramount to real estate. And we need to compete against people that have zero access to 0% capital that can transact, because they're going to keep lowering their fees lower. I mean, they're just going to be real, right? Economies of scale, they lower and lower. So, yeah.
Did you just, is that a Jordan Belfort reference there that I caught?
A little.
Jordan Belfort. I'm not a fan of his crooked side, but I am a fan of the book. I thought it was fantastic. Neither here nor there. So this is super cool. When you get into how you make this work and how this will become successful and how this will scale, what are the numbers looking like for you? What has to go right? What are the margins that you have to be like, if we can do this, we can do that?
Yeah. So first step for us was to build a buyer base, because we want to be able to move quick. And as you know, in real estate, getting buyers is not that difficult.
Yeah.
And so, you know, within, we launched
Facebook ads, and you're pretty much there.
Quality wise, not so much, but there's other. Yeah, you have to dig through like 400 of them to get like one real one. But like, essentially, like we've been able to establish a really strong pipeline in just, we launched in August. On a buyer side, we established, you know, an extremely strong pipeline of buyers in the tens of millions in terms of total value. And so our goal right now is we have 80% of them that are sitting on the sideline, just like every average buyer that's like, okay, I need to buy something, but there's nothing available, which is great because that's what we want. We're not the brokers that wait for something to come on the market. Like, that's just not what we do. Most will do that because it's the easy way out, right? But ultimately, it's our time right now to take those and start creating those transactions. Once you start creating those transactions and more people hear about it, I think that's just what really starts triggering it out. So like, we have a story from Jason that talks about his experience there. We need to just keep creating more and more stories like that, where the homeowner saved money, got an easy transaction, the buyer found exactly what they wanted, and voila. And I think that's really what our mission is right now, that we've grown such a strong buyer base.
So when you, yeah, I think it's super important. So it's national, right? You can go anywhere on the grid.
So we're right now only in Illinois. And this is part of my experience from my past, the past companies that I've worked at. And it's been like anything, like when you overexpand from market to market to market too fast, it's hard to control. We really want to get a lot of penetration purely in Illinois. Anyone outside of Illinois can go and claim their home on the platform, but we essentially have to find a partner for them out there in that state.
Okay. So I'm just trying to understand, like, because when you look at how this scales, like any marketplace, you need to have the buyers, otherwise the sellers have no reason to take the minute that it takes to fill this out.
Precisely.
So I think to your point, like the buyer, it's the same thing for me and one of the companies I work with. It's like, we're trying to find renters, and the renters is actually kind of complicated, because especially if you're using like Facebook, like you can get lists and things, but at the end of the day, there's like a certain trigger, and you know this from the algorithm, there's certain triggers that doesn't really matter financially. Like, it might be three kids. Okay. Most homes, three bedroom out, or unless they have like, you know, no guest room necessary, like anything else. You know, there's like little things you have to kind of pare out. So finding renters is actually kind of a struggle, but that is because we are using only the inventory we have. So for me, if I have like 50 something houses that I can rent, single family homes, I have to find renters who fit only what's in my buy box. For you, you literally can find anyone and their brother and sister who are interested in buying a house today or in 5 years, and say, the price is right, you're going to pull the trigger. If you find something that works and price is right, you're going to go. So for you, you literally just open up the floodgates once you've got enough buyers online and just tell people your house has a buyer and we're here to help you meet them. You're Tinder for houses.
Exactly. You're exactly right. I mean, like if you're, there's nothing more I have to add. You're exactly right. There's literally nothing more I can say. I mean, it's really, I mentioned in the beginning, 42% of people are willing to transact. Only 1% do it at a time, and 3 to 5 do it at the year. That gap is just insane, right? Especially you're talking about real estate. This is not like chocolate bars, right? Like this is like real, like massive transaction volume, right? Even if you trim, like you look at the total owner-occupied homes in America, you're talking about 80 to 85 million homes. You even make a cut for those 42%, and you still make another cut for the 27%. You're still like you're talking about 1 million homes on sale a year. You're still literally talking about 15 to 20 million homes that are potential to transact, and like that like kind of gap right there is so massive that like it's not about capturing a small amount of that gap. It's about just going after that whole piece and unlocking tons of people like my father who are going to be transacting, and people that don't need to make sacrifices. An average buyer will make a ton of sacrifices in their home purchase because they overpaid or underpaid. They see their neighbor's house go on sale like within a few months after moving in, and they're like, I wish I had that house. Like there's tons of reasons. We don't want them to compromise on neighborhood. That's so important, right? You find a place you love, you walk outside, you feel like the curb appeal, and that's what we call any curb. Yeah. We can find a house on any curb.
And I love the domain, by the way. It's a great, right? I love the name and the domain. Great, great name.
Thank you. So like, it's like, ultimately it's just creating an environment that's fair and equitable and everyone is just taken care of. And that's why I'm doing this. So, yeah.
I love the story. I think you're a super smart dude. I am incredibly impressed, and you've delivered everything that I was hoping. When I reached out to you guys, I was like, God, I hope this guy is as good as I think he is, because this looks super smart. And I've heard so many different companies, including the ones that I'm involved with, who, I don't know how to put this, like they're missing the big idea. Like it's one thing to execute. It's one thing to have a lot of money. It's one thing to be like, we know who's the buyer. We know who the seller. We know all these things. You don't have an algorithm. You don't have any sort of predictive analytics. You have absolutely no understanding of how to automate the process to make it easier. You can't solve the true problem. You solve the problem for the bag of money, but you don't solve the problem for the person who actually has to go through this shit.
Yep.
And that was what caught me when I saw that write-up. So kudos, I don't know if it was Jim or whoever it was that wrote it up for Chicago Widow, but they captured it perfectly. So this is awesome. I hope people go check out anycurb.com. If you live in Illinois, we're in Chicagoland, and I'm in Glen Ellyn, obviously, so we're in Illinois. If you're listening to the show from Illinois, definitely check it out, and I imagine not too distant future, you'll open it up to other Midwestern cities.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much, Scott. You nailed it all. So happy to be on the show.
I love when people say that at the end. I don't get any compliments in my house anymore now that we have a child. It all goes to Vivian, so when someone gives me a compliment, I take it all day. For everyone listening to this show, you can follow me at Katoon. You can follow Technori and all things social at Technori. And I implore you subscribe to the Technori newsletter. We're giving it a revamp in the next week or two. You're going to start seeing individual pieces of content that come out and tell you about the companies that I'm looking at on Republic that you can invest in. And I, as we talked about in this show, I seriously hope people read it and start investing. Even if it's $1,000 a year that you blow out, if as long as you can afford it, you will learn more from investing in these companies so that when you do buy a house, you'll be smart enough to go to Anycurb. So thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Dan, for joining the show. Boom, that's a wrap.